Full Story is supported by AMP Super. There are moments in life where everything shifts. A new job, a new home, a new direction. But those same moments can also shape your future. AMP calls these super moments. Times to check in on your super. And with 24/7 digital financial advice, AMP Super helps you make more confident decisions as your situation changes. Search AMP Super Moments to find out more. AMP Super. Built for life's super moments. AMP Super, issued by NM Superannuation Proprietary Limited. See PDS and TMD on amp.com.au and consider what's right for you.
This is The Guardian.
Welcome, welcome one and all to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Tonight is our final broadcast from the Ed Sullivan Theater, where...
I'm Regid Ahmed.
And I'm Jonathan Yerushalmi.
And this is Decoding America, a podcast from Guardian Australia. Well, Jonathan, as you just heard there, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, one of the most cussing comedy shows critical of Donald Trump, now officially off the air. But it's quite unfortunate timing because it's just as tensions within the Republican Party are really starting to heat up.
Yeah, there are signs that amid low approval ratings, the intractable war in Iran, and a chaotic lead up to the midterms, Donald Trump's own party might be starting to turn on him. Anger has been building for a while now, but this week it burst out into the open.
There's a growing number of people on the right who have a form of TDS called Trump Disappointment Syndrome.
Trump Disappointment Syndrome, a play on Trump Derangement Syndrome. And that was very fired up Thomas Massie making his point. We're also going to come back to Stephen Colbert, whether political satire can survive under Donald Trump. That's a bit later on. But first, Jonathan, last week we talked about Donald Trump waging war on his enemies in the Republican Party. Now the tables might have turned.
This week we've seen a couple of signs that the Republican Party, and when I say the Republican Party, I mean in Congress and more specifically in the Senate, might be starting to turn on him. And this is really important because if we look back at Donald Trump's career in the Republican Party for the last 10 years, he has held up very strong amongst Republicans. They haven't turned on him over the gutting of the federal government in the last year. They haven't turned on him over his criticism of Ukraine, over the immigration enforcement and that scenes of people being arrested by ICE. They've given him a free rein.
Demolishing on part of the White House?
Tariffs.
Nothing cut through.
Exactly. But now things might be changing.
What is it that has pushed them over the line? Because as you say, every time something new happened, I would think, boy, the Republicans must be angry about this. Nothing. So what's changed?
I think it's a culmination of a few things. So obviously we've been talking about his low approval rating for the last couple of weeks. That's hurting everyone because by association, it hurts Republicans. But also a couple of things this week. So last week we talked about this IRS fund. Donald Trump was suing the Internal Revenue Service, the equivalent of the tax office in America. They settled by setting up this fund to pay people who claim persecution by the federal government, including perhaps people who rioted on January 6th and stormed the Capitol. So that's angered a lot of Republicans. And then also a potential Iran deal that they don't quite like the shape of. And as you mentioned just then, this continuing turning on some Republicans in Congress.
We'll take them one at a time. Let's start with the so-called weaponization fund. Critics call it a slush fund. You've been listening to Senator Ted Cruz's podcast this week. We know he had a podcast.
Yes, the things I do for this podcast.
And you've picked this rather revealing tidbit.
There were fireworks at an epic level. And I got to say, it's one of the roughest meetings I've seen in my entire time in the Senate. There were a lot of Republican senators who were just pissed.
So that's Ted Cruz talking about a meeting that was held at the end of last week between quite a lot of Republican senators and Todd Blanche, the acting attorney general. You know, he's leading the Justice Department, but he's very close to Donald Trump. And the description we got of this meeting was, in one word, and this is a quote, shit show. And we had more than a dozen Republicans senators questioning Blanche about this IRS fund. They were furious about it because in their view, it makes them look bad. Voters don't want to see federal money, taxpayer money going to people who may have been rioting on January 6th.
I've got to ask about that because I thought a lot of Republicans do believe this narrative that the Justice Department was weaponized under Biden. I thought that they would be okay with this so-called slush fund.
Look, I think some are. We've definitely had a few Republican senators come out, you know, in support of it, but many, many are very uncomfortable with it because you've got to remember the Senate, they have much longer term senators. So they have terms that last for 6 years. So they're able to be a bit more bipartisan. They're often more moderate. They don't have to cleave as closely to the president's agenda because they're not up for election every 2 years.
That's a good point.
A lot of them are up for election this year. A third of them will be up for election in November, but a lot of them are frankly angry about how this makes them look. And it's put this really important funding package that the president wanted to get through Congress, funding immigration and ICE, a $70 billion multi-year package. It's put that at risk because from what we've heard, there was a lot of anger inside this room. Senators questioning the acting attorney general about why they did this now, how bad it made them look politically, saying they were fed up with Trump's insistence on settling personal scores and pursuing pet projects at the expense of their legislative agenda. And that's just paralyzed this kind of measure to get this funding through.
That really surprised me. You mentioned it, a $70 billion legislation to fund ICE, the Immigration and Border Patrol. And then they sort of have delayed it because they're unhappy with this weaponization fund in the ballroom. That to me was the first signal that there were kind of real world consequences for Donald Trump, as opposed to just a little disgruntled whisperings.
Yeah, well, so a lot of what I know about this meeting comes from Ted Cruz, which is handy. Thank you, Ted.
But and the fact that he even spoke about it.
I think that is interesting. I think it is indicative that he is speaking out so candidly. He's a supporter of the president. I think he's broadly a supporter of this fund. But the fact that he's willing to speak out so candidly and openly about what a disaster this meeting was and how much Republicans are turning on Trump's own attorney general, that tells us something in itself. But we heard from other Republicans, unnamed, who said that in the meeting, they basically said that if this had gone to a vote, if they'd put this funding package to fund border security and ICE to a vote, Democrats wanted to attach an amendment that would have gotten rid of the IRS fund. So it would have got rid of Trump's weaponization
fund.
They're
pushing back.
And Republicans were going to vote with Democrats to do this. They were actually going to vote against Trump's own measure. And so the Senate just had to pull it because they couldn't embarrass Trump like that.
Right. Okay. So we're seeing some sort of movement maybe. And there is an indication that Donald Trump is feeling the heat because he was asked about whether he's going to go to his son's wedding. Don Jr. is getting remarried in the Bahamas, I believe.
He got remarried over the weekend.
Oh, it's already happened.
It already happened.
I lost track of time, Jonathan. But here is how Donald Trump answered when he was asked, are you going to go?
He'd like me to go, but it's going to be just a small little private affair and I'm going to try and make it. I'm in the midst. I said, you know, this is not good timing for me. I have a thing called Iran and other things. That's one I can't win on. If I do attend, I get killed. If I don't attend, I get killed. By the fake news, of course, I'm talking about.
It's not good timing for me. I don't know if we would ever get more of an admission from Donald Trump, but he mentioned the Iran war. That's really putting pressure on him as well.
Yeah, I mean, before we get to global geopolitics, let's spare a thought for Don Jr. His dad didn't go to his wedding.
No, well, it's a second wedding. I mean, you know.
Oh, all right. You're very forgiving.
It's the second time. I feel like that's kind of okay. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah, like, so there was a flurry of diplomatic movement over the weekend that it made it appear like a peace deal with Iran, or at least a deal to get the Strait of Hormuz open, was very, very close. And from what we understand, it has been closed and those negotiations are continuing on. But what we're seeing is a huge amount of pushback from Republicans in the Senate, yes, but actually from the wider party, from people who are quite close to Trump over what this deal could be. Now, we know that Donald Trump is under a lot of pressure to end this war. We've talked about it before. The economy is suffering. Oil prices might be about to skyrocket even further if the Strait remains closed longer. He needs to get out of it, but he needs to get out of it by saving face. He can't be seen to be, you know, retreating. He can't be seen to securing a deal that's worse than the deal that Barack Obama secured with Iran in 2015. He needs to come up with something.
I have to say, I feel very gaslighted every weekend when I hear that there might be a deal. It's quite exhausting because it's so crucial to Australia, opening the Strait of Hormuz and the global economy, as well as, of course, what's happening inside Iran. But my understanding is there are some loyalists who don't want an Iran peace deal. So Donald Trump is sort of stuck in the middle a little bit.
Well, I think they don't want this Iran peace deal. So what we're looking at potentially from this peace deal is something that is literally just going to get the strait open. And in return, Iran might see some of its assets unfrozen and get a couple of billion dollars like that. But it basically just returns us to the status quo of February 27th, the day before the war was launched. And all of these other things like the nuclear program or the support for proxies in the Middle East, it doesn't really address that, and negotiations will continue on later. But a lot of Republicans are really angry about this frozen assets issue, about the fact that billions of dollars might be handed to the Iranian regime.
They don't want to see that.
Exactly. And that was something really controversial that happened with Barack Obama's deal. And so, for instance, you have Senator Roger Wicker, who chairs the Armed Services Committee. He called it a disaster. Ted Cruz, we've just talked about him, very close to Trump. He says it was deeply concerning. Mike Pompeo. Now, at one point, I think Mike Pompeo was in the running to be Trump's vice president last year. He was the head of the CIA in the first term. He was the Secretary of State as well in the first term. He called the outlines of this deal not remotely America first and accused it of being similar to the Obama nuclear deal.
I have seen hawks in his party even questioning why, what was the point of launching the conflict in the first place, which I thought was quite brave, along with the other examples you provide. And Donald Trump has said on social media, I think to some of the criticism, that this deal is going to be the exact opposite of the one that was negotiated under Barack Obama's term. But that to me is the crux of it here. In terms of just Iran, why I feel like the Republican Party and Donald Trump are stuck, because nobody is going to want to get out of this without a better deal than what Obama got, called the JCPOA. Is that what this is all about, just one-upping his rival?
Well, and he needs to show that he did this for a reason. There needs to be a reason for the last 10 years, a reason for him pulling out of a deal, a reason for him launching strikes on Iranian nuclear facilities last year and then this wider war this year. And look, they're pushing really hard back. The White House is pushing very hard back on these dissenters in the Republican Party. Stephen Chung, he's the White House Communications Director. He replied to Mike Pompeo after Mike Pompeo questioned the deal. And this is a quote. He said, Mike Pompeo has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. He should shut his stupid mouth and leave the real work to the professionals. That's from the White House.
That's to a Republican.
Yeah.
To an ally. Makes me laugh hearing you swear. But that's a quote. That's a quote we should say. Look, I want to play devil's advocate here just before we move on. What if I argue that this is not a turning point, that this is just all about Republicans worried about losing their seats in the midterms? There's an unpopular president. You mentioned that. I think a New York Times, Siena poll put his approval rating at 37%. It's really low. The economy is bad. People are getting upset. If those things improved, can I argue that the dissent would go away?
Look, and I don't want to overplay this as well. I think there is an argument that a lot of people within the party still support him. We know, for instance, that it's very difficult to get elected as a Republican without his help. We talked about Thomas Massie last week, this sitting House member who Trump endorsed his opponent in the midterm primaries and he lost. Just today, an hour before I walked into this studio.
I'm so glad you're mentioning this. Tell me. Yes.
John Cornyn, sitting Texas senator.
Talked about last week.
Been in power for 24 years. He has lost his primary because Donald Trump endorsed another candidate, a candidate who was impeached by his own party at one point. This is not a popular figure in Texas more broadly, but voters threw their weight behind this Ken Paxton because Trump had endorsed him. It makes it really difficult to stand as a Republican without Trump's approval. But you're right, he has record low of disapproval. People do not like what Trump is doing, 37% in some polls. And normally when we see this with any world leader in the world, it could be, you know, an Australian election, in the UK, unpopular leaders typically give lawmakers a bit of leeway. They allow them to stand without having to campaign with them. They distance themselves from them because they want to keep the legislative chamber and they know, okay, I'm a bit unpopular. I don't want to sully your campaign by standing next to you. Donald Trump doesn't let people do that. He is involved in all of these elections. He is talking about them all the time. He is endorsing people. He is demanding that members of his party pull ever closer, and he's punishing people that speak out.
They still need him. They're still afraid of him. And that's the crux of it to me, that we're still a long way from seeing Congress behave the way it should. They have a separation of powers. Congress is meant to behave separately to the executive, to the president. I feel like we're still a long way from seeing them take up that responsibility again and just stop passing legislation, really pushing back.
Yeah, Trump has sidelined Congress in an historical way this term. He's relied so much on executive orders. But I think we are starting to see the outlines of that, certainly in the Senate. If the way that senators are speaking out, the threat to his legislative agenda, I think we might start seeing a little bit of movement there as the months go along.
All right, well, let's turn to what is a bit of a cultural moment in the US. It's the end of an era. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert is now off the air. It was number one rated. He was known as the king of late night. He's gone. And I remember watching The Late Show with David Letterman, Stephen Colbert's predecessor, for many, many years. And I also remember when Stephen Colbert started to satirize Trump, it really cut through, and that was what made him. And now that's gone.
Yeah, they're such an important part of the kind of US cultural landscape, aren't they? We don't really have late shows like that here, things that combine a bit of comedy, some celebrity interviews, and a lot of news, frankly. And I think it's really interesting to see the way Donald Trump's relationship with these shows have changed. I don't know if you remember when he was first running for president in 2015, 2016, he went on Colbert. They kind of joked a bit. You know, I think Colbert challenged him a bit. He went on Jimmy Fallon, I think, in 2016, another one of these late night hosts. And Fallon got a lot of criticism for kind of normalizing Trump. And he apologized later on. I think he said he went too soft on Trump and he should have been a bit harder. I think Trump went on SNL, Saturday Night Live as well.
That's right. He did. Yeah.
He's been really ingrained in that when he was just a celebrity. But now he's kind of turned against them a bit because what we know about Donald Trump is he doesn't like to be criticized.
The New York Times culture podcast with Wesley Morris really put this into context a little bit and the politics behind it. Let's just have a listen to how he describes what this moment means.
But now the crisis, I don't know, it's existential. There's no talk show going into the late night slot. Meanwhile, over at ABC, Jimmy Kimmel lives at almost weekly risk of cancellation now. And, you know, their crimes can basically be boiled down to offending the president.
So what he's hinting at is some of the questions around the timing of why Colbert's show was cancelled. So just to briefly remind us, Colbert criticized CBS's parent company Paramount for making a $16 million settlement payment with Donald Trump. And then it was shortly announced that The Late Show would come to an end after that. Colbert sort of hasn't said a lot about it, but he said, I think we're the first number one show to get cancelled. CBS did blame the economics. TV is expensive to make. It's fair enough. And TV viewers are declining. The landscape has really changed. But some people really saw it as the network bowing to Donald Trump, and they were trying to get a merger through as well.
Yeah, that's crucial because Paramount, who owns CBS, was trying to get a merger through with Skydance, and it was going to make them one of the largest entertainment companies in America. And they needed approval from the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. That's the regulator of broadcast in America. And I think a lot of the criticism was that this was a sweetener, that maybe Colbert was taken off air because Donald Trump doesn't like him as a way to kind of push this through. And it happened. That company is now being run by the Ellisons, who are very close to Donald Trump and his family. And since then, the FCC, the regulator under Trump, has been quite forthright in the way it talks about late night shows.
I mean, we should say, obviously, Paramount, the Ellisons would deny any of those allegations. But what Wesley Morris was hinting to there was that now Jimmy Kimmel is under attack because he made a joke about Melania Trump. Melania Trump didn't like it. Donald Trump didn't like it. And now the parent company there is having their license reviewed early.
Yeah. And remember, Jimmy Kimmel was taken off air last year for a few days because he made some comments after the murder of Charlie Kirk. A lot of people in the MAGA movement were really offended by those comments. And Brendan Carr, who leads the FCC for Trump, he basically went and gave an interview and said, you know, the ABC needs to be very careful. And it was seen to be threatening ABC's license. And then within hours, Jimmy Kimmel was taken off air. Now, he was returned because there was an outcry by viewers. But since then, it's been very obvious that the FCC under Trump has these late night shows in its crosshairs.
It's a really febrile, uncertain environment. Briefly, before we move on, I want to talk about what Colbert is going to do next. Can I share that with you?
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
He's apparently writing a new Lord of the Rings movie.
Wow.
Alongside his son.
I wasn't expecting
that. He's a huge Lord of the Rings fan, and he feels like there's a certain number of chapters that were missed out of the movies, so he's going to do a new one with Peter Jackson.
Right.
Like, it's official with the actual director who did the other Lord of the Rings movies. And within 24 hours of the show ending, the late show, apparently he reportedly attended his brother's wedding. And then he hosted a public access TV show called Only in Monroe. It was Michigan public access television, which was hilarious. So I think Stephen Colbert will be okay. But the question is, will America be okay?
And whether late night TV shows, I think that they're so representative of maybe something that is kind of past now. You talked about record ratings. I think 6 million people watched that final episode, which is huge. But I looked it up. So Johnny Carson, who's kind of the godfather of American late night TV, American late night shows, when he aired his final episode in the 90s, an estimated 50 million people watched it. It's nowhere near, not anywhere near those numbers now. And I think it points to a kind of real schism in American culture. You know, Donald Trump's rise was aided by this, the fact that people could lock themselves into echo chambers and that we don't have these kind of shared cultural moments. And the decline of TV is part of that. The decline of these late night shows is part of that. The fact that people aren't all sitting around the TV watching it together, imbibing the same thing, listening to the same comedians and imbibing the same values. People are on their phones. Their kids are looking at YouTube. You and I are listening to podcasts. I think it's really interesting what this represents.
And a question of maybe why it's so they're vulnerable to being buffeted by political winds, because they don't have that power, that advertising power that they used to. And if it doesn't say it all, The Late Show is going to be replaced by a show called Comics Unleashed, apparently an apolitical comedy show.
Perfect in the age of Trump.
Well, with that, we'll go to a break. Afterwards, the Democratic Party published their autopsy of the last election, but why doesn't it shed much light on why they failed?